welcome to the Heart of the Matter. Well, we're having a busy week around here, and then tomorrow we're planning on sharing the gospel to multitudes, literally multitudes, at a very large public event. But I decided to record a program this week anyway, first because there's something I've been wanting to share with all of you for quite some time, haven't got around to it, and secondly, it's something which will not take any time for me to prepare. All things considered, it just isn't going to take any time here, because all I'm going to do is read something to you out of a book. It's an out-of-print book, I believe. It was published in 1952. This book was written by a Baptist missionary in Mexico by the name of Orville W. Reed. Now, the portions I'm going to read today detail Roman Catholic persecution of Christians, both Mexican and converts to Christ. I say Mexican converts to Christ, but also Christian missionaries, non-Mexican. Now, this persecution took place in the 40s and 50s. That's the time the missionary was there. And there's other information in here, too, concerning Rome's influence and effects in Mexico. And there's other fascinating information, for instance, concerning the Indian religions of Mexico. And I might get to some of that, maybe in a couple of weeks, or at least in the not-too-distant future. But today, I'm going to just stick with reading about the persecution of evangelicals in Mexico. And again, specifically during the time the missionary author of the book was there, during the 40s and up until the 50s. In fact, I don't know how long he was there, because I believe he was in Mexico when he wrote this book, which was published then in 1952. And I'm going to warn you in advance, and I mean really warn you, that when I get to Spanish names that I can't even come close to pronounce, and there's going to be an awful lot of those, I'm not going to skip them. I'm not going to spell them out. I'm just going to roll right along and do the best I can. And no doubt, in some cases, I am going to utterly horrify all listeners of this program who know the Spanish language. Now, after that, I'm going to give just a few comments on this controversy over the Vatican supposedly seeking to change its policy toward homosexuals. So, here we go with a portion of the book, The Challenge of Mexico to Missions by Orville W. Reed. I'm actually just reading excerpts from two different spots. Two long excerpts. One is very, very long. It's most of a chapter. Here we go. Let us not forget that the Catholic Church does not believe in religious liberty. When she talks of such liberty, she is fighting for liberty to persecute and destroy any religious or political group that would dare oppose her in any of her views. The Iron Curtain of Rome is as bad as that of Russia. In Spain, in some parts of Mexico, and in other Latin American countries, to become an evangelical is to risk one's job, business, home, and in many cases, even life itself. In my 14 years in Mexico, and I'll just stop there, so obviously he arrived there in the 30s, the late 30s. I have known of dozens of evangelicals killed in cold blood by fanatics spurred on by priests. Hundreds of others have suffered persecution in different forms for the only reason that they turned from Rome to Christ. This missionary, talking about himself, has been stoned and threatened with death for being a Protestante and for telling others about Christ. The priests excuse themselves by saying it is the, quote, holy wrath, unquote, of the Catholic masses that make them kill and destroy in their persecution of Christians. However, anyone who has investigated knows that the Mexican people accept the gospel and are friendly until the priests incite them to violence. The priests often tell the people that we are communists, that we do not believe in God, that we worship a naked woman or a black goat, that we are plotting to overthrow the government, and that we hate the Virgin Mary. One of their big arguments is that missionaries are fifth columnists of the imperialistic United States to take over the country, and that all Mexicans who become Protestantes are traitors to their country. All right, let me just jump ahead here. Here we go. In the chapter, The Bitter with the Sweet, I guess actually I have two different excerpts. This is the beginning of the chapter, the bitter with the sweet persecution. Perhaps nowhere in the world is there a more lovable and friendly people than the Mexicans. It has been my pleasure to have been in the home of the humble Indian, the backwoods farmer, the wealthy business and professional man, state and also federal government officials. And I have learned to appreciate the fine qualities of our Mexican neighbors. Therefore, I hesitate to write this chapter for fear that it may give someone the wrong impression of Mexico. When you read about the terrible persecution that many evangelicals suffer, do not think that the persecuting fanatic is a true representative of Mexico. He is the victim of a religion that makes him think that he is serving his country and his God by persecuting and even killing Protestantes. Many times I have gone into a town or village and have seen the hunger of the people for the gospel and their fine, friendly spirit. However, the next visit would find the people cold and hostile. What had happened? The priests had told them lies about us and made them believe that they should have nothing to do with us. Sometimes they even threatened to excommunicate, which is to literally send to hell then, he says, anyone who listens to us or reads our literature. As they are taught never to doubt the word or power of the priests, they can no longer be themselves but must become the tools of their religious leaders. They are taught to hate, to hurt, and to kill blindly without stopping to ask if it is right or wrong. Once I wondered how it would feel to face a mob of howling fanatics. Would it be possible to love and not hate? When the test came with its jeers and its flying stones, a feeling of deep love and pity filled my heart. I could not help but have a feeling of respect and even admiration for the people whose religious zeal made them willing to fight for their faith. They were like Saul of Tarsus, who thought he was serving God when he was persecuting the Christians. After receiving three blows of stones in the head and leaving Las Flores, I said I keep going, but I'm stopping on this word. Jalisco, yeah, the J should be an H, I think. With a shower of stones hitting the car, I think the meaning of our Lord's words on the cross were more easily understood. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Many of our most faithful Christian workers once were fanatics who hated evangelicals and were ready to do them harm. Now, let's jump to the next page and ahead a little, and this is when you're really going to hear some Spanish words mutilated, but we're going to do our best here. All right, this is titled The Crimes of Intolerance, and the first thing we have here are parts of an article published in the magazine Tiempo of Mexico City, February 8, 1952, translated from Spanish. With Christian serenity, but with great energy, we oppose the continual extension of the Protestant campaign, and what is more, we will fight it until we finish with it. Thus said Monsignor Luis Maria Martinez, Archbishop of Mexico, at the beginning of 1944, on the occasion of initiating, under the sign of intolerance, the Guadalupe Jubilee Year. These words were a reiteration of the pastoral letter that he had sent to the clergy and the faithful on October 29th the year before. And here's another quote. Well known is the intense propaganda that the Protestant sects are carrying out in all the republic, perfectly organized and with great resources, financial resources. By means of it, they are trying to snatch from the Mexican people their richest treasure, the Catholic faith that the Holy Virgin of Guadalupe brought us for centuries. And as in the Middle Ages, at the shout of God wills it, all the Christians united to capture the glorious sepulchre of Jesus Christ, thus now, with the conviction, he's talking there about the Crusades, with the conviction that God wills it, and Mary of Guadalupe asks it, let the Catholics place their efforts at the service of the faith. The thorough fight against the hellish serpent of Protestantism was to be initiated in Mexico. Hellish serpent, that's a quote. That's what the priests were calling it. That's what this Monsignor called it. It would be a continuation of the plan that the Vatican had already succeeded in carrying out in the rest of Spanish America. In 1941, the Chilean Episcopacy, in a collective pastoral letter, had condemned the activities of the Protestants. In his Easter message of 1943, the Bishop of New Pamplona in Colombia did the same, and he was followed by the Archbishops of Quito and Ciencia, Ecuador. In Costa Rica, the Apostolic Vicar of Limon sent out a similar pastoral letter. In Nicaragua, the Archbishop of Managua and the Bishop of Granada publicly refuted the evangelicals. In Cuba, the Archbishop of Havana accused the Lutherans, and of course by that they mean all evangelicals. It used to be from the start of the Reformation, the Roman Catholic Church would call all Protestants Lutherans. Accused the Lutherans of wounding the sentiments of the people. And in Brazil, the Cardinal Sebastian Lemo de Silveira Sintra, Archbishop of Rio de Janeiro, spurred on his faithful against the non-Catholic religions. Although conceived as a part of a general campaign, the persecution against the Protestants was to have in Mexico peculiar characteristics. An unprecedented violence. Now, remember, this is being written. This was 1952. It's an article in a Mexican newspaper, Tiempo, of Mexico City. There were Catholics, not priests, but Catholics in various positions that were even shocked by what the priests were organizing and carrying out here. Of course, it's not as if Rome, their master in Rome, didn't know what was going on. But listen to this now. Speaking of this campaign by the priests, an unprecedented violence whose extremities have been murder, rape, pillage, and extermination of small communities were only matched by the indifference of public opinion and the lack of repressive action on the part of the state. In these coexistent acts, repeated crime and systematic impunity are the notes that qualify the history and details of such atrocities. Since October of 1944, now he's talking about Mexico itself, the date on which, in the name of God and the Virgin, Monsignor Martinez made his call to violence, 76 perfectly detailed cases have come to the knowledge of the federal authorities. Now, this is just 76, and this is 1944 to 52. This is just 76 that the federal authorities had reports on, so there are others. Behold, a few of them. On November 25th, 1944, the Evangelical Church House of La Gloria, Veracruz, was burned, as well as nine houses of Protestants. Seven people, among them five children, died in the disaster. A little later, the Catholics also expelled 60 families from the village who were affiliated with the Church of God. May 27, 1945, in Santiago, Yoche, Mexico, the Catholic priest Jose A. Vivas led an assault on the homes of Protestant pastors Feliciano Juarez and Vicente Garita. The preachers were lynched and quartered and their homes dynamited. July 1st, 1945. Now remember, these are actual events. A Mexican newspaper is reporting on them. These are crimes that the federal government of Mexico had details on and witnesses for. June 1st, 1945, the parish priest at Calais. Mykoykan burned the Lutheran temple, and he's got author's note. The expression Lutheran is commonly used to denominate any evangelical church. In this case, they were Pentecostals, and of course, he's not justifying the doctrine of the Pentecostal. He himself is a Baptist. Urge on by him, that is the priest, the Catholics abused the women. Now you know what that means. And beat up the men. The evangelicals who succeeded in escaping fled to the mountains. 105 of them arrived in Mexico City seeking protection. Author's note, they had gone over 300 miles. January 15th, 1947, in Nebelinas, Hidalgo, various sinacuistas Author's note, a fanatical religious political organization, let me try that again, Sinarquistas, I think I have it, led by Candido Munez and Julio Batista, spurred on by the local priest, attacked the evangelicals who were gathered there. Many were wounded and others expelled from the village. They beat and hanged the pastor on a tree. March 7, 1946, in Actepan de Morelos, Puebla, the Catholics by force entered the house of the evangelical minister, took him out of his home, and dragged him from a saddle horn through the town. Once dead, they burned his body in the public square as in a medieval auto da fe. Now, you know what an auto da fe was, right? They burned, of course, live Protestants at auto da fes when they had the power to do it. That means act of faith. That was their act of faith, burning to death men and women and even children at times. Let's go on. When on July 31st, 1946, the agents of the federal police, Marcelo Fernandez Acheno, Leopoldo Arnes Diaz, arrived at San Felipe de Santiago, Mexico, to investigate the atrocities committed by the Catholics, the priest Pedro Juarez had the mob take them to the mayor's office. Both of them were, now these are agents of the federal police. Both of them were tormented, but Fernandez, I think it's Aquino, but I'm not sure, was scalped alive with a machete, and his eyes were plucked out with a nail. Afterward, they clipped off his ears, broke his teeth with blows, and clubbed him until his bones were broken. When he was dead, they cut his body in pieces and threw them to the dogs. Arino Diaz succeeded in escaping. Author's note, he was an eyewitness to the incident. He broke loose and ran away from the mob with the mob after him. Though wounded, he arrived to report what happened. Perhaps this is the only time that justice acted to punish the monstrous crime. Some of the fanatics who took part in the offense were detained in the Toluca jail, and it is possible that they may be condemned to 18 years in prison. However, the priest, Pedro Juarez, is still enjoying liberty to spur on to violence, according to the pastoral letter of Archbishop Martinez. And so because these were two federal authorities, there was some punishment. And at the time this was written, several were in jail. March 8, 1947, in Amico, Jalisco, the Catholic priest, after a scuffle that he himself provoked, kidnapped several Protestants, carried them to his church, and using inquisitional methods, obliged them under the threat of death to be baptized according to the rite of the Holy Mother. December 7, 1948, in Tabernillas, Mexico, Anicito Hernandez and Porfirio Valquez, these names are coming hot and heavy now, even some of the ones I can pronounce I'm mispronouncing, but at any rate, these two, incited by the priest Luis Reyes, murdered the Protestant Antonio de la Cruz Carmona. The victim received 3 machete blows to the head, 4 bullet holes in his back, and 3 knife wounds in the side. Last October 10th, knowing that the evangelicals were going to open their church building, the priest Reyes said in a sermon, quote, "You Catholics do not have trousers to finish with these accursed Protestants." Author's note, an expression meaning that they were not brave enough. "If you do not do it, I will never again impart the spiritual aids." And of course, you know what that means for a Roman Catholic. It means hell. That's what they believe. General Jose Maria Tapia, in his letter of November 1st of this year to the governor of the state, reproduced also the following phrase from the priest of Tabernillas. "The government," this is the priest, "doesn't worry me, because if the federal government intervenes, all the neighboring towns will rise up against it. After all, the state government has its part." April 13, 1949, in Rio Verde, St. Luis Potosi, the body of Samuel Juarez, that was a place now, San Luis Potosi, the body of Samuel Juarez, the little son of Pastor J. Ascension Juarez, was found with 85 knife wounds in it. This dirty crime is attributed to the vengeance of the priest, Jose Maria Rosales, whose abuses against the people had been halted by the minister. So the minister was actually protecting the Catholic people from their own priest, and his little son was knifed to death, apparently by the priest, of course, or one of his henchmen. December 27, 1949, between Tecali and Concepcion, Cotila, Puebla, a group of Catholics urged on by the priest Antonio Carbajal attacked the evangelicals Esperidon Perez and Marcial Escalona. As in the scuffle, Filiberto Hernandez lost his life. His companions set fire to the house of the Protestants, so apparently one of the Catholics was killed in the fight. But his companions set fire to the houses of the Protestants of Concepcion, Catala, and killed six people. And so they came into that town and killed a number of people and set fires to houses. October 13, 1950, in Maguey, Blanco, Hidalgo, Alberto Marin and Teofilo and Isidoro PJ, that's all I can get out of that is PJ. I don't think it's PJ, but that's how I'm going to say it. P-E-J-A-Y. I said I wouldn't spell these names, but that one's so strange I had to. Were killed by blows with an iron bar by a group of 25 drunk Catholics. So both of these were killed by blows from 25 drunk Catholics. Explanation that they felt hatred toward the Protestants was sufficient to leave the aggressors in liberty. So they were questioned. They said, why'd you do it? Well, we felt hatred toward the Protestants, so they let them go. December 7, 1950, for the second time in the same year, the Catholics attacked the church building of the Presbyterian Church in Tixtala, Guerrero. At the cry of Long Live Christ the King, they broke the furniture, raped the women, and wounded the men according to the exhortation of the priest Adalberto J. Miranda. July 8, 1951, between Santa Rita and Tlalpan on the road to Pueblo, two individuals on horseback fired upon a group of country people who were going to an evangelical meeting. The child, Maria Isabel Suarez, 5 years old, was gravely wounded, and some people in the car took her to the Carrez Siles Hospital in Pueblo. The most recent atrocity occurred on Sunday, January 27th, in the town of Mayoro, 20 kilometers from Hacotilan and 40 kilometers from Toluca, the capital of the state of Mexico. On the occasion, this is the state of Mexico. I wasn't aware there was actually state of Mexico. I know there's a number of different states, but at any rate, on the occasion of the visit of some preachers, 21 people had gathered in the home of Francisco Garcia to dedicate themselves to their pious prayers. Very soon afterwards, now this is a Catholic writing this article, so you'll hear Catholic phrases even to describe sometimes what Protestants are doing. But very soon afterward, the bells of the Catholic Church began to sound, and a few minutes afterward, a mob of fanatics armed with clubs, machetes, axes, and hoes fell upon the Protestants. All of them received wounds and blows. The pastor, Augustin Corrales, was dragged with a rope from the saddle horn and left for dead at kilometer number 115 on the highway to Querétaro. For the first time in many years, the confessional, that's the Catholic press, the confessional press of the capital of the Republic gave notice of these happenings. Excelsior, known by its close ties with the Catholic Church, informed in 8 columns in its edition on January 29th, two evangelical preachers were at the point of being lynched. A furious mob attacked them while they preached. After a dramatic persecution of 10 kilometers before falling, they were stoned. And then, as if they were mad dogs, the preachers were persecuted by the infuriated mob, armed with clubs and stones. And when catching up with them, after that, the unhappy men had run more than 10 kilometers and were exhausted. They were beaten in a frightful manner until they were left in a state of coma. The liberal newspaper, Zacalo, published a dramatic account by various writers who, in spite of being Catholics, condemned the act. The better-informed people agreed in pointing out that the priest of Maravo, Fernando Vidal, as the director responsible for the attack. However, no one informed that in this same day and at that same hour, the inhabitants of San Pablo, Texcoco, in the state of Mexico, were in a peril because several hundred Catholics attacked their church building. In San Pablo, Texcoco, there are no Roman Catholics. All the people belong to the Mexican branch that was formed in the period of the Reformation. Author's note. This refers to a national Mexican Catholic Church founded during the Mexican Reformation. All right, that explains it. There were none of the Roman Catholic Church. It was a breakaway national Mexican Catholic Church founded during the, quote, Mexican Reformation. So that explains that comment. There were no Catholics in that town, no Roman Catholics. There were Catholics. Let's go on. For that reason, the priest of Santa Maria Uzumbio, Antonio Zaziar Torres, wanted to take advantage of the date, January 27th, anniversary of the conversion of St. Paul to Catholicism. Author's note, his conversion to Christianity. Well, I don't think there is a date, but that's what Romanists apparently celebrate on that date. Anyway, they took advantage. The priest wanted to take advantage in order to regain possession of the memory of the saint in an evangelical town placed under his protection. The bold priest congregated the fanatics of 20 communities and marched upon Texcoco. So this was a Roman Catholic priest, and in Texcoco there were just the other kind of Catholics, but anyway, with the intent of robbing the homes of the evangelicals who also lived there. These, however, opportunely warned, asked the help of the authorities, and a company of soldiers was placed with orders to prevent any attack. Zaziar Torres and his 500 men passed quietly by San Pablo, but the priest, on arriving at the outskirts of the town, renewed his threat, saying, "Next time it will be when they do not have the soldiers." Far from decreasing in number and violence, the atrocities of this kind are increasing. Each new happening that accents the power of the Catholic hierarchy is translated into a greater intolerance toward other faiths. First, it was the Guadalupe Jubilee after the showy ceremony of the year 1950, the crowning of the image of Tepeyac, and we've talked about that image on Heart of the Matter back quite a while ago. Later, the enthroning of the Virgin of Guadalupe in Rome, Paris, and Madrid, and finally the papal concession of the title of primate to the Archbishop of Mexico. This last happening seems to have been celebrated with the most recent atrocities. Besides the case of Maravo and San Pablo Texcoco, the following have occurred so far this year, February 1952. In Zacamitla, and I'm not going to try the next word, County, Veracruz, two individuals shot and killed the Protestant catechist Miguel Martinez. This occurred 3 days after the priest, Jose Perez, had said in the pulpit, "I promise you, my children, that I will go at the front with you to finish off these evangelicals with clubs." In Acazonica, 12 kilometers from Fortin de las Flores, Veracruz, the municipal agent, Samir Torrio Espelio, decreed on the 1st of January that Protestantism was prohibited. Those who want to continue being evangelicals, he said officially, will have to leave or die. Those who live here have to be Catholics. The Archbishop of Mexico tries to free himself of any responsibility. He said last week, "We lament these happenings in Maravo, but we do not have any control over the people in this respect. It is to be regretted that the Protestant ministers go to Catholic people to diffuse their faith. We have always tried to avoid these embarrassing acts, but the people have their beliefs, and good or bad, we cannot take that away from them." That's typical Romish subterfuge, isn't it? This is the very Archbishop of Mexico saying this when confronted. Now, remember, I'm reading from a Roman Catholic newspaper. The declaration of the primate in the judgment of one observer is insincere, false, and contradictory. Exactly so. It is insincere because it is unbelievable but that the Archbishop would lament that they follow implicitly his teachings. On the contrary, he is proud of the results of his teachings and delights in them. The teachings of Dr. Martinez in regard to the matter of intolerance is included in his pastoral letter of October 29, 1944, and are as clear as their consequences are monstrous and deserving of punishment. They are false because if the Archbishop has the power to thrust the Catholics into the crimes, he also has the power to stop them. And far from trying to avoid these embarrassing acts, as he says, he encouraged them with such declarations that justifies, from his viewpoint, intolerance and atrocities. They are contradictory because the reproach that he hurls at the Protestants for preaching in the Catholic towns could be thrown at the Catholics who diffuse their faith in Protestant, Buddhist, Mohammedan, or Shintoistic towns. To be congruent, the Archbishop ought to declare likewise that in the same way the faith could not be snatched from the Catholics, neither should the Catholics try to snatch their faith from the Protestants. Besides, adds the Observer, the Archbishop has no right to reproach anyone who diffuses his faith, while Article 24 of the Constitution establishes that every man is free to profess the religious belief that pleases him and to practice the ceremonies, devotions, or acts of worship respectfully in the church buildings or in his private home when such acts do not constitute a crime or fault penalized by law. Now, that's the end of that fairly long newspaper article. I do hope I didn't lose you on any of that. And some names I did all right. Some were far from all right. But it is amazing. Here you have a Catholic, granted a liberal Catholic newspaper, reporting all of this. And, of course, that Article 24 of the Mexican Constitution owes its existence to the Mexican Revolution. And I'm not justifying everything that happened there, but the Roman Catholic hierarchy and Rome really had the people under their thumb and were controlling everything. And they lost some of that control as a result of that revolution. But they obviously have a lot of control left yet, and they're not, or they weren't at this time being arrested for these things. And actually right now there are things similar going on, though not on quite such a widespread basis. But let me read a little more, because now the missionary goes on and he tells some of the things he knows personally about. He starts out with the Baptist mission in Veracruz. I have known personally of many cases not mentioned in this article, he says. The Baptist Church in Veracruz has a man in charge of a mission in a small town. The priest had him killed. His brother took his place as director of the mission and was also killed. However, there was still another volunteer to carry on as director of the mission. And then he gives this example, Martha Garcia. Martha Garcia, graduate of our Torreon Seminary, was working in a small mission at Rio Grande near Santa Cruz de las Flores, San Martin County, Holasco. She went to the town of Santa Cruz, where a lady who had a small grocery store had invited her to teach her something about the Bible. While we were talking about the scriptures, a woman came in, and when she found out what they were talking about, she began to shout, "You are a daughter of Luther. You do not believe in the Pope. You do not believe in Mary." A crowd gathered around, and a young man asked her to let him see her Bible. When she gave it to him, he started to burn it. She asked him not to do it, telling him that it was God's word. He wanted to know how he could know that it was God's word, and she told him to ask the priest. "Let's go see him now," he answered, and the crowd made her go to the priest's home in an annex of the church building. She held up the Bible and asked the priest if it were not true that it was the Bible and that it had the Gospels in it. The priest admitted that it was so. However, by the time he had taken in the situation and added, "But your Bible is adulterated and is full of lies," then the crowd began pushing her outside. As they reached the street, two buckets of dirty water were thrown on her. A nun and a group of small children began throwing rocks at her. Miss Garcia started out of the town to the little village where she was staying. The crowd followed her, shouting bad words and throwing stones. Small stones hit her. At last, a large stone hit her in the head, and she was unconscious for over an hour. When she came to, the mocking crowd was there ready to stone her again. However, someone placed her on a burro and took her to the village. The next day, she had a high fever. Nothing was done about the matter as the priest had too much influence. Then you have the case of Gonzalo Delgadio. in Tamazula, Jalisco, where we have a small mission, a large mob attacked the home of a believer when they were having a Bible study. With a dagger to his throat, they made the young preacher, Gonzalo Delgadio, promise not to return to the town. However, the believers were faithful, and now we have a good mission there. If we had money for a building, we would soon have a strong church there. A young law student from our student home is the present pastor. In Las Flores, Jalisco, we have a Goodwill Center in mission. A mob led by the priest forced open the door of the mission, destroyed the books and furniture. The young seminary student, Ignacio Gabrera, in charge of the mission, was beaten. A man attempted to make a horse trample him. One man tried to stab Cabrera with a machete, but he dodged the blow, and the knife stuck into the horse. Then you have this case of Maria Escovel. In the same town, a mob attacked a lady missionary, Maria Escovel. A taxi driver from Guadalajara happened to be there and rescued her. He made the mob believe that he was a fanatical Catholic and that he was going to take her to jail. He brought her to her home. We had to get a squad of federal soldiers to put things in order. And in Guadalajara, we had a wave of persecution in 1944 and 1945. Three young men from our student home were going home from church. They were attacked by 25 Catholic boys. One of the boys, Jose Menendez, received a stab in his back with a dagger that just missed his heart. We were having services in the First Church. First Church is the name of it. One night, a converted priest was going to speak half an hour before the sermon. Even standing room was taken up. When the ex-priest got up to speak, a Catholic Jesuit priest and about 40 seminary students stood up and began to shout and would not allow the ex-priest to speak. I rushed to the police station, but the sub-chief in charge that night refused to send policemen out to establish order because he said it was a Protestant church. However, we had a deacon whose cousin was on the city council, and through his influence, we got some protection. Our own home was stoned 10 times in 1 month. One night, gas bombs were thrown in through the windows. They were so poisonous that the Red Cross did not allow us to use the room for 3 days. One night, 3 men stoned our home, and a rock broke the wire screen and the window pane. Glass was shattered on the bed of our little daughter, Anita, where she was sleeping. I went around the block and waited, and soon they came back and threw their stones again. I caught one of them and took him to the house. The police came and carried him to jail. As our 8-year-old boy, Roderick, walked home from school, for several days Catholic school children would wait for him and torment him. Once they dragged him 3 blocks to make him go to Mass. We are sure that the purpose of the Catholic leaders was to make me do something that would give them an excuse to start a mob, and especially if I should have hurt someone, it would have given them an opportunity to have run me out of the country. And I think we'll stop there. But it's pretty amazing. That went on and on, didn't it? Just examples of the persecution of Protestants in Mexico. That was in the 40s. When did it start? I think it was 1944 they started with examples up to 1952. And obviously, they could have given more. But we'll stop there. I'll just say this. Rome never changes. The heart of popery has always been a persecuting heart. Today, though the Mexican government provides now some protection for evangelicals and missionaries, persecution is on the upswing again, and it's priest-instigated, as always, and sometimes led persecution, where the priest is right with the people doing the assaults. Now, I said the Mexican government provides protection for evangelicals, but at the same time, many local officials look the other way when our brethren are harassed, beaten, and even evicted from their homes. And so it's a tough mission field. And even the federal authorities, the federal government there is so corrupt. And then you throw in the drug cartels, how dangerous that is. And of course, the Mexican church, Catholic church, in many ways, they look the other way there too, because they accept money from the drug cartels as their offerings. And so it is not surprising. As I say, Rome never changes. And we would just say, may the Lord strengthen our brethren in Mexico with grace to continue on in the faith of Christ, to continue on bearing witness for him, and we trust leading souls to him. And may the Lord open the eyes of those evangelicals in this nation who are so deluded and unfaithful as to think Rome is our ally or our friend. And that brings me to this recent situation in which supposedly the Pope and some of his bishops made a move to liberalize, if you will, the Roman Catholic Church's policy concerning homosexuals. To summarize, as I understand it, the Vatican recently issued a draft document summing up speeches given at one of Rome's synods, this one on family issues. A synod is a meeting of Rome's bishops. Now, in that document issued by the Vatican and styled by many to be a move to a more inclusive Roman Catholic Church, as I have seen over and over, a move to a more inclusive Roman Catholic Church, there's a section titled Welcoming Homosexual Persons. And in this section, you see what's spoken of is giving, quote, fraternal space, unquote, to sodomites in the Roman Church and treating them with respect, as well as playing up the gifts and qualities of homosexuals. Well, before I go any further, there has always been, for a long time now, so-called fraternal space for homosexuals in the Roman Catholic Church. And it is a very inclusive church that way. I'll get to that in a minute. But there was supposedly then a power struggle when this draft document, it was a draft document that was at question at the center of the so-called controversy. And then the final document in question was modified because the conservative bishops won out over the liberals and Pope Francis. But this is nothing new. It's nothing but Romish bait-and-switch tactics geared to throwing everyone a bone. Hang in there, liberal Roman Catholics. A new liberal wind is blowing from Rome. Don't attack the Roman Church, homosexuals. You have a champion in the Pope and some of his bishops. Be patient. Conservative Catholics, our evangelical friends, never fear. Rome stands foursquare against the agenda of New Sodom. Well, the truth of what Rome does stand for is found in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, which is a summary of the Roman Church's doctrine and dogmas. I mean, we hear new evangelicals rightly saying that all one has to do is study the Quran and what Islam really teaches and stands for. Then you'll know. Then you'll know when it comes to, for instance, the treatment of non-Muslims and religious liberty and so on and so forth. There are propagandists out there fooling you, but study the Quran. You'll know what Islam really teaches. Well, why don't those same new evangelicals, and yes, they're right when they say study the Quran, but why don't they look in the Roman Catholic Catechism? Now, concerning homosexuality, for instance, here's what they would find stated in paragraph 2358. The number of men and women who have deep-seated homosexual tendencies is not negligible. They do not choose their homosexual condition. For most of them, it is a trial. In other words, they're born that way. They must be accepted with respect, compassion, and sensitivity. They have to be accepted. And this means into the Roman Church. And so, you know, all of this smoke and mirrors about, oh, we're going to be more inclusive. Oh, no, they've decided to stand up anyway against Sodom's agenda. Can we just say it's a bunch of baloney? It's the same old, same old. Let me go on here. Every sign of unjust discrimination in their regard should be avoided. Now, let's stop there. Rome, of course, is religious and political, and they have their bishops. They have their bishops represented in every state capital in the legislature. They have their lobbying machine, and it's big and well-funded, and they have it in Washington as well. And they are the ones pushing, and were pushing, the non-discrimination laws to include sexual orientation. That's what happened in Wisconsin. The Roman Catholic Church, back in the late 70s, was very, very much pushing to have these laws and include sexual orientation and to have hate crime laws and include sexual orientation. It's a fact. Let's go on. When they talk about unjust discrimination, well, they're talking about both in the state and then, of course, in the Roman Catholic Church. They don't want any either. These persons are called to fulfill God's will in their lives, and if they are Christians, that is, if they are homosexual Christians, so-called, to unite the sacrifice of the Lord's cross with the difficulties they may encounter from their condition. So this business all of this tempest in a teapot about the Roman Church is liberalizing, so to speak. No, they're not. The Roman Church is becoming more inclusive. Oh, they're not. They already are. They already are. Sodomites are in the Roman Church. There's nothing new in those so-called controversial statements in the document I mentioned. Right now, homosexuals are welcome in the Roman Church. They take part in the vile mass. They're involved in various Roman Catholic organizations and ministries. And as the Catholic Catechism demands, they're not to be discriminated against. They're to be held as Christians. They're to be treated with respect, compassion, and sensitivity. But that's enough on that, and enough for this edition of The Heart of the Matter.